Joining us again in this segment of the program is Dr. Whitney Lehman, who did such a fine job talking to us recently, Whitney, about meat.
Yes.
And agribusiness and a lot of things I think that gave people pause.
I hope so. Gave them pause?
Well, hopefully it saved some people with pause and gave a lot of others some pause. There's an issue I know that is near and dear to you that I wanted to go over a little bit. And we talked on the show previously about some new legislation that took effect on January 1st. There's one bill, AB 2216, that took effect on January 1st regarding domestic partners. This one allows domestic partners registered in California to inherit a partner's separate property should the partner die without having made a will. Well, I guess that's got some utility. I don't know if you have a particular opinion on that issue, because I know this greater issue of the civil rights of domestic partners is quite near and dear to you.
It certainly is. Actually, I think Assembly Bill 26, which was sponsored by Assemblywoman Carol Midgen of San Francisco, was changed between the original version and the final version, Assembly Bill 25, which came into effect last January 1st, 2002. Assembly Bill 26, as it was originally defined, allowed all adult couples to register as domestic partners. So you could be an adult person in an opposite sex domestic partnership, a same-sex domestic partnership, and it didn't matter. The governor and the legislature considered the bill, a lot of them viewed domestic partnership as an alternative to marriage that was inappropriate for opposite-sex couples that have the option to marry. So basically, the California state legislature decided that all couples who can marry should marry.
Uh-huh.
And specifically, opposite-sex couples who have the opportunity to get married should get married. That's the thing to do. It's a respectable American thing to do.
You should go out and get married. But I guess they made an exception for certain heterosexual couples?
No, that was the original version of the law.
Okay.
So anyone who wanted to be a domestic partner instead of getting married could be. What happened was the legislature didn't like that. They decided that opposite sex couples could get married and they should get married. So they redefined Assembly Bill 26.
Uh-huh.
It was finally passed as Assembly Bill 25, the domestic partnership law. So Family Code Section 297, the domestic partnership law, applies to only same-sex couples or opposite sex couples if they're over 62.
Wait a second, though. If they thought if you could get married, you should get married.
That's right.
Why doesn't that apply to someone age 63?
Well, because what happened was they didn't want to upset the senior citizens who vote for them.
Uh-huh.
So what they said was if you're 62, a lot of people over 62 choose not to get married because they want to keep claiming their deceased partners, their deceased husband or wife's Social Security benefits.
Uh-huh.
So if you're over 62 and you're getting death benefits from a deceased spouse,
uh-huh,
you want to continue to claim those. So you don't want to remarry because you want to keep, you know, that extra income coming in. And if you married somebody, you would have to give that up.
I see.
So what they said, you know, not wanting to upset the senior citizens who go out and vote like good citizens should, they said if you're over 62, you can become domestic partners as well. You can have some sort of a legal partnership and share medical benefits, but you can also keep the death benefit from a deceased spouse coming in as well.
Interesting.
That's so highly unfair, obviously.
Well, the reasoning was, I guess you can't get married if you're homosexual.
That's
you
right.
Can if you're heterosexual.
Right.
So we're going to let you get the domestic partnership that you seek as a gay couple, gay lesbian couple, whatever.
Right.
But that this whole age thing just really is really ageism, isn't it?
It's extremely discriminatory. Absolutely, yeah. I mean, it's very clear why the legislature did this. You know,
because people that are over 62 generally have a lot more political clout.
They certainly do.
AARP,
they vote.
Very,
yeah,
very
that's
effective.
Right. Lobbying organization. Absolutely.
Right. A lot of money at stake.
I think same-sex couples should be able to share benefits. They should be able to become domestic partners. But I think the sad thing is that the state of California won't let same-sex couples get married. And that would really solve a lot of troubles if gay people were allowed to get married. Then those that wanted to get married could get married and share their partner's benefits. And those who chose not to get married wouldn't be able to. But it's unfair to say that all same-sex domestic partners would get married if they could. I think that's completely inaccurate. And I think the state is ridiculous thinking that to
following
be the case.
Following that line of reasoning. Yeah,
yeah. Absolutely. Because that is their line of reasoning that, yes, all gay people would do the respectable thing and get married if they could. But since they can't, we have to allow them to become domestic partners. Oh, I think that's perfectly fine. But I think it would be a lot more fair if they allowed gay marriage. That would really be the fair thing to do. Because what happens is people like myself who are in long-term opposite sex domestic relationships aren't allowed to share benefits. And there are, I'm sure, some same-sex couples who would choose not to get married if legal marriage were an option.
One wonders why our legislators, in their wisdom, think it's so imperative that people run out and get married. Why do they think that is, something that's so that they want to push so heavily? I don't get it.
I don't get it at all, especially when you consider that the trial court system in California gets $2.2 billion every year. At least this year, the state budget has allocated $2.2 billion to the trial court system. The family court is obviously a large portion of the trial court.
I think I'm starting to see the reason.
Yes, and so they get...
For the 50% divorce rate in California,
absolutely.
This is generating one sizable chunk of change
absolutely.
For our good friends, the
could be
trial
half
lawyers.
$1 billion, could be $1 billion. I don't know what percentage family court takes out of the court, the state court's budget, but I assume it's a lot. And as you were saying, 50% of new marriages end in divorce within 7 years, I believe
I
it
think
is.
It's actually even higher than that now, isn't it?
It could be. I read
you
some
looked up
divorce statistics a while ago. And
they're pretty
divorce.com. They are grim. And so basically people get married, they have children, they buy property together, and then they're in court a few years later dividing it all up. And the taxpayers are picking up the bill for that. So why does the state decide that this is the thing to do? You should go out and get married and then get a divorce and have the taxpayers pick up the bill for these sorts of things. It's
I just criminal,
if you ask me.
Yeah, I click and clack. The Tapp brothers on public broadcasting did a very funny thing yesterday or a couple days back. They were quoting Dave Barry and some other favorites. One of them was Steven Seagal, as he's known
I like Seagal better.
Yeah. They quoted him as saying this famous line that he's not going to get married in the future. He's just going to go out and find a woman he doesn't like and then give her a house.
That would save a lot of money, I bet.
Good in the long run.
I think one other reason the legislature doesn't want opposite sex domestic partners to be covered under Assembly Bill 25 is that they claim it's going to cost the state too much. For instance, mm-hmm. if I'm able to share my partner's medical benefits and my partner happens to be a state employee, which he is, he works for the University of California, then the University of California and ultimately the state is going to have to pay for myself as a dependent, basically. I could share his medical benefits if we were domestic partners. But ultimately, I don't really think that it's going to save the state any money, especially not in my case, because I don't have a job. And if I were able to share my partner's benefits,
right.
it wouldn't cost the state that much because I have to pay a certain percentage. He has, I think he's got Delta and maybe some sort of Blue Cross. But as it is, I went down to Medi-Cal and applied for that. And that's certainly going to cost the state a lot more than if I was just were just allowed to share his benefits. So.
Well, at some point in this program in the future, we're going to have to talk about Medi-Cal, a subject near and dear to my heart, about the system that, wastes an awful lot of tax dollars. There's got to be a better way.
I mean, what I've heard from doctors is that it's certainly to my advantage, actually, to get Medi-Cal and not be covered under his insurance because Medi-Cal is so much better than anything else. It covers a whole lot, apparently,
It does cover an awful lot, and I just wish I had $100 for every person I've seen that brought in all three kids,
absolutely,
with their cold to get cough syrup, because then it saves money, and then you've got a little more money to go out and buy more six packs and cigarettes. For the sake of a few dollars, if we just were dispensing cough syrup somewhere at a program where you could just get discount cough syrup, I think it would save an astounding amount. But that's a topic for another day.
And the topic of three kids is a topic for another day, too.
We can go on about that one. Yes, it is. And I do want to talk about population, the great mystery to me that in the past 20 years, intelligent discussions of limiting the world's rampant population growth just have gone by the boards.
I know. It's depressing. I don't understand it.
But when we talked a few, I guess, weeks back, maybe months now at this point, on the subject of ethical treatment of animals, much of what we talked about sort of stuck in my mind. And when I read a Time magazine, before I throw them away, if I find an old magazine, I'll look through it for something, useful for this program. And by God, I think I hit the jackpot on the Time magazine, March 11th, last year, 2002, article entitled Hunting Made Easy that I wanted to go over with you.
Yes.
I wasn't aware of the fact that shooting captive animals to mount their heads on a wall is a booming sport. I would say sport in quotation marks. And there's a question of article written by Jeffrey Kluger asking whether, you know, Congress needs to step in at this point. He starts out the article describing a Corsican ram trotting about a 100-yard-long pen in central Pennsylvania. Doesn't pay much attention as men enter into the enclosure. And these guys, I guess, have bows and arrows on board. These are supposed hunters. An animal in an enclosed space that can't get away, that's sitting there like a cow out munching, you know, chewing on its cud out in the field. These guys walk over with a bow and arrow and start slinging arrows into this beast.
These are some amateur hunters, I think.
I just think this is, I mean, you know, I listen to people talk about hunters all the time on, you know, talk radio.
Mm-hmm.
And they're, you know, the NRA, how important it is that we have arrival, you know, how important it is to hunt and rights of hunters and this and that. And I've seen hunters up close and personal. And let's just say, I'm not impressed.
Not the brightest bunch of bulbs in the drawer, I assume.
Well, I mean, there are hunters who I think who really do like to get back to nature, who really feel it's important to have some sort of, I guess, gamesmanship, some sort of sense of fair play in how they're going to hunt.
I think if you hunt something for food, I can certainly understand the need or the desire to do that, especially if you don't like your food pumped full of hormones and antibiotics, things like that. I can completely understand that. But, well, what I don't understand is why killing for pleasure is acceptable in a civilized society. I can understand most people accept that killing in self-defense is okay as a rule, but killing for pleasure, why do we find that acceptable as a society?
Well, I remember being as a kid very upset with a neighbor kid whose dad was a gunsmith. He used to basically go out and shoot, murder birds for no good purpose. And then sometimes when he had an interesting one, bring the carcass over to say, hey, look at this one. What do you think this was? Beautiful little yellow canary laying there dead.
Right. Now, see, I think that's an interesting point, because I think if I had a formaldehyde jar and I was putting, you know, birds and other wildlife, you know, in the formaldehyde jar, I imagine
for scientific
I could be
study,
not even for scientific study, just because I was interested, you know, in killing things.
Okay.
I don't see what the difference between doing that and if you hunt something with, you know, a bow and arrow or a gun and bullets, somehow that's okay. But if, you know, you gas it for sport, which is doing the same thing, you're killing it just in a different way. If you poison it or something, then somehow you're a sociopath. But it's okay if you use a bow and arrow or a bullet. If you're not eating the animal, you're just doing it for sport. It seems psychotic to me.
I can see certain areas like islands where they get like, you know, Kauai, where you got feral pig populations overrunning the landscape, goats that, you know, were introduced that are eating all the vegetation away. I can
That's
see going out there.
That's not for sport. I mean, I can understand for population control.
Yes,
maybe,
I mean, that too could be a justification.
But what does sport mean? You know, you get some
you
pleasure
it,
from
you
doing it.
You kill it for the pleasure of killing it.
For the pleasure of killing it.
In my
go.
Mind, it's always been about one step removed from Jeffrey Dahmer. But that's just my opinion. That's just my opinion.
I would say it borders on
But reading this article, I think you're maybe not quite even a full step away from Jeffrey Dahmer. When you go out there with a bow and arrow and you start shooting arrows into this poor animal that doesn't realize what, you know, doesn't understand what's going on, all of a sudden you're shooting me. And then they describe in this article, they basically walk over to it and, you know, continue to shoot it until it finally dies. At point blank range.
Yeah, that doesn't take a lot of talent. I assume, well, those are called canned hunts, by the way, and they are legal in many states. And the sad thing is, I mean, it's terrible that they do it to any animal, but actually a lot of endangered animals end up in canned hunts because lions retired from zoos and other exotic animals roadside zoos end up in the hands of private owners.
Who purchase them for the purposes of giving some jerk a so-called trophy for murdering this animal with about as much skill as it takes to basically, you know,
an
hammer
ancient
a nail.
Lion from retired from a zoo or...
Right.
You know, a family pet that's no longer wanted. Yes, these do end up in these canned hunt areas and are hunted for pleasure.
I mean, I remember like there was a big article. I mean, this is there's a big issue in Alaska, whether you could shoot wolves from helicopters.
Oh, that's interesting.
Oh, yeah. 15 years ago, it was a big issue. They because jerks with a lot of money would basically hire a chopper, go up and chase the wolf in the helicopter till it pretty much couldn't run any longer. Mm-hmm. Then they would put down, get out with their rifle, and plug it.
Oh, that's
now,
awful.
Where is the sport in this?
Exactly.
Well, there's apparently up to 2,000 of these hunts that are that exist in the U.S. When they mention 500, maybe in Texas alone. Now, doesn't that just figure?
That doesn't surprise me. Texas is the capital of roadside zoos, too. I think so. I just can't understand the mentality of a person who would engage in that, either for being the proprietor or being a guest at the canned hunt ranch. Honestly, I just think you have to be sort of a sick person to want to do that. It just seems crazy to me that there's no point in that. You know, you've got some sort of completely helpless or aged or decrepit animal, and you shoot him with the most high-powered weapon you can, or bow and arrow.
Deers are lured to feeding stations where they are serenely unaware of the men in the stilt-mounted tin shack 75 yards away. Such lying in wait or shooting over bait is legal in Texas and defended by hunters. It promotes a clean kill, said Gardner. Even though you got a 30-06 high-powered weapon with a telescopic sight, some of these guys are still so ham-fisted, I guess they still can't manage to shoot the animal in a vulnerable spot. So to up the ante, they bring it right in and let it sit there and feed as they're 75 yards away, and then they can plug it and make sure they can actually kill the thing.
Yeah, in that case, it's not even a clean kill because you're that close to something, and especially if you're not the only person shooting it, you're going to completely destroy any trophy value it has. So basically, you're just slaughtering something for no particular reason.
They were shooting the sheep in the stomach so as to not ruin the trophy value of the mounted head.
Somehow, I doubt that they all hit the stomach, and especially with a bow and arrow, you know how wrong that could go if you're in close range.
Yeah. But in Texas alone, this hunt industry apparently brings in $1 billion.
I'm sad, but that just doesn't surprise me. I what are people searching for, their manhood or something? It seems like there'd be a cheaper way to do it, but
I don't know. I just think of guys with, you know, that maybe inadequacies in other areas, perhaps, shall we say, that trying to overcompensate with big 30-06 and telescopic sights. That's just my opinion.
Yeah, I'd rather see them driving Corvettes. That's what they do in California. Hunting for sport seems extremely cruel, and I don't know what percentage of hunters out there are actually just hunting for dinner and how many actually respect nature and respect the animals.
A lot of them just like to go out there and kill beasts. They like to kill animals. Yeah. I don't know what percentage it is either, but I'm sure it's too darn high.
Yeah.
Anyway, Dr. Lehman, thanks again for coming.
Thank you for having me.
All right. You're listening to Radio Parallax on KDVS 90.3 FM. Let's take a short break.